Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Bob Dancer is America's premier video poker writer and teacher. He's written 10 books, including Video Poker for the Intelligent Beginner and the best-selling Million Dollar Video Poker. He helped develop the computer software Video Poker for Winners, and in 2004, he was inducted into the Video Poker Hall of Fame. Richard Munchkin has been a professional Advantage player for over 30 years and is in the Blackjack Hall of Fame. His book, Gambling Wizards, Conversations with the World's Greatest Gamblers, is a testament to the many ways you can succeed at gambling. The goal of the show is that you'll be a more knowledgeable gambler tomorrow than you were yesterday. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good morning. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guest today is Michael Bluejay, a former colleague of Michael Shackelford, who has played low-level blackjack and has many stories to tell, including dumping some on Shackelford. We'll be talking to Michael Bluejay in a few minutes. We received an email address to gamblingwithanedge at gmail.com from a listener in the United Kingdom. First, he wants to know if, in light of the Phil Ivey ruling and the Playboy Club ruling, is there any life for Advantage players in England or anywhere else in Europe? Richard, what's your take?
Well, for 35 years, I've been saying that London is a gold mine that no one has figured out how to get the gold out of the mine. I thought Phil Ivey had done it, but, obviously he's hit a speed bump there. But that doesn't mean that you shouldn't play in Europe. I mean, for card counters, I think there are many, many countries in the world that are much better for counting cards than the United States is. And sometimes, you have to take some risk, but more risk, more reward. So, even if you factor in sometimes having your money taken from you, for example, at an Indian casino, sometimes the Indians are going to steal your money. That doesn't mean you shouldn't play at Indian casinos. You'd be leaving an awful lot of money on the table if you just avoided every casino where you might have some kind of problem.
Okay. This guy from the United Kingdom also has taken a few international trips and seems to be losing a lot of money exchanging currencies back and forth. Any tips on that, Richard? You've done that a bit.
Yeah, well, the best thing is to try to establish a network with other Advantage players. So, when I go to a foreign country, usually I can find someone in that country that will sell me currency at the real exchange rate and then buy it back when I'm ready to leave the country. Some countries you have to use the black market, like Korea. They have currency restrictions, so you can get a much better rate, using the black market. And everyone knows the black market. It's not a big secret. Everyone in the neighborhood has their own, black market money exchanger. So, other than that, I mean, you're just going to have to pay the rate. Some casinos, by the way, will exchange the money for you, and whatever currency you sold them, they will sell you back at whatever rate you exchanged it at. So at least that much of your buy-in you can get back at the same rate.
As long as you didn't make a mistake and make money on it.
Yeah.
All right, good. Let's talk to our guest. Michael Bluejay formerly was an associate of Michael Shackelford, the Wizard of Odds, and has appeared on this show once before, back when Shack was the host. Michael Bluejay, welcome back to Gambling with an Edge.
Well, thank you for having me, and I actually don't know why you have me, because I'm essentially a nobody, but I mean, you, Richard Munchkin, you're in the Blackjack Hall of Fame, and Bob Dancer, you're a video poker legend, so, really, I should be asking you guys the question. So I guess my first question is, Bob, how did you first get interested in video poker?
Ah, good. Well, we're going to do an interview about me at some other time.
Okay.
But
You know, I am. I don't know. You said a former colleague and
I'm
associate.
I'm losing control of this interview right off the bat.
Okay, you got it back. You got it back right there. But you said I'm a former colleague and associate of the Wizard. I mean, we're still friends. I mean, you know, I'm going to see him after the show. In fact, so
okay.
You know, and we talk shop. But you know, it's too bad he couldn't be here, because if we did, we'd have in this room, we'd have a Wizard, a Dancer, a Munchkin, and a Blue Jay. You know, I mean, that's an interesting quartet. I mean, it's like. You know,
we'd
dancer,
be ready for Burning Man.
Yeah, a Dancer, a Munchkin, a Wizard walk into a bar, and the bartender says, "What is this, some kind of joke?"
Yeah. I've lost control of this interview.
Okay.
All right, good.
First question.
One time, you and Michael Shackelford had a bet to see who could get bounced for counting cards first at the Gold Spike.
Yes.
What happened?
The Wizard will make a bet on anything, and I like to bet also, and especially with Wizard, because, you know, they're usually fun. So we had that idea, so, you know, we did it. So we went to, you know, we didn't want to go anywhere where, you know, I might necessarily, you know, I might want to play later. So we picked, you know, this dive. The Gold Spike, you know, the maximum bet was $50. You know, if you bet $50, you know, they'd call out a checks play, because it's the maximum bet on the table. So you couldn't vary your bet very much. But anyway, we went to separate tables, and you talked about me standing out. I stood out even more than, you know, I frizzed my hair out to here. I wore the loudest green and yellow tie-dye T-shirt I could find. I stood up while I played. As the cards came out, I counted them audibly, you know, out loud, pointing to every card. I used exactly two bets. I had 5 or 50, and when I put the 50 out, I would just slam it down. And, you know, the dealer wasn't yelling out checks play to get the pit's attention enough for my preference. So, you know, every time I did it, I would help her. I would call it checks play, you know. And my favorite time was the dealer was showing a 6 up. So, you know, everyone was feeling pretty good about their hands. And then she turns over a 5. So I grab my head and I yell, "Oh no, there's a shitload of 10s left," you know. And anyway, so but no matter what I did with all that, couldn't get bounced. They didn't notice. I mean, the dealer knew, of course. I mean, I might as well have been wearing a polka dot shirt and flippers, as obvious as I was, but it wasn't her job to do anything about it. You know, it was the pits, and the pit was just incompetent, you know. So we played there for, I don't know, an hour, and we finally gave up. We both walked out, you know, and I don't know what the Wizard was doing at his table. I mean, he was nearly not as flamboyant as me, I can guarantee that.
You know, I know quite a number of people who, for some reason, have made these same kind of bets. Like, I don't know. I guess I don't see the entertainment value in it, but I had a couple of friends recently, within the last 6 months, who did the same. They decided to do this at the El Cortez, mm-hmm. which is a place that normally you can get bounced for counting in about 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And
for breathing, you can get bounced in 3 minutes.
And now part of it may have been that they were both really drunk, but I guess they were spreading like $5 to $500.
Wow.
And didn't get barred, which it was. I found amazing, but, you know, of course, who knows? Maybe they weren't playing that well.
Well, my question to you, Michael Blue Jay, is why on earth would you want to do this? Now, clearly you didn't want to go back to the Gold Spike, but every now and then one of those pit critters will move to a different casino. And at this other casino, you may show up one day, and it sounds like you made it out of your way to be memorable, and he's going to remember you, and so you're going to be ruining a future opportunity for a silly bet.
Well, I think we did first establish the incompetency of the pit crew at the Gold Spike with the experience, but I guess it would be fair to say that I didn't know that before I walked in. You know, the main thing is just that I was neither one of us was making our living as, you know, counting cards. I mean, I was running the Wizard's website. I was running my own website. If I counted during those days, I counted occasionally for fun. I was no longer doing it as, you know, to make a living. So if, you know, if they spotted me anywhere else, I guess I wasn't concerned. Although that didn't play out. I mean, I did count quite a bit recreationally after that and never had problems.
You know, I have another friend who, this goes back many, many years, like 35 years ago, who decided to do this at the Barbary Coast. And the Barbary Coast was notorious also.
Notorious, that was the word I was going to use.
Yeah, yeah. It was another place where, you know, you would get thrown out in like 5 minutes. So
yes.
His whole team went and sat at the bar And he went in, and he had all these computer printouts with him. And he would sit down at the double deck, and he would bet $5, and he would mutter to himself and look through the computer printouts. And then when the count went negative, he would bet $500. So he would do everything the opposite of what he was supposed to do. And sure enough, they barred him in like 5 minutes.
Yeah. All right. Now, periodically, husbands get busted for talking in their sleep. Lovingly murmuring the name of Angelina Jolie, Kate Hudson's, or whomever won't sit well with most wives. And as we all know, when mama isn't happy, nobody's happy. Now, Michael Blue Jay, you have a story that, according to Michael Shackelford's wife, he got busted for talking in his sleep.
I wouldn't call it busted, but, I used to be a frequent house guest of the Wizards, and I'd stay there, so I was friendly with his whole family. And his wife relayed to me one morning how she woke up in the night and found that he was reciting the digits of pi in his sleep.
Wow.
Only the wizard.
Only the wizard. Now, yeah. I have to say that I one time was sharing a hotel room with Max Rubin, and
Max would not be reciting the digits of pi.
No, but at like 3 o'clock in the morning, you know, out of a sound sleep, I hear him laughing hysterically. And I wake up and I look and he's in bed, I mean, laughing his head off as if somebody was tickling him mercilessly.
Funny dream.
And I guess he was sound asleep, and it went on for a minute or two, and then he just went back to sleep and started snoring. And the next morning I said, "What the hell was that? You were like laughing." And he goes, "Oh yeah, Joanne says I do that sometimes."
Oh, I wanted to hear the funny thing that happened to him in the dream,
he didn't remember. Yeah. He didn't know he had done it, but yeah.
Oh well. Okay, another story, Michael Blue Jay. You were using a pretty young lady as an accomplice to help you team up in blackjack. Rather than living in a hotel suite, you were living in a youth hostel for $11 a day or some such.
Yes.
Tell us what happened.
Well, I stayed at the hostel because it was cheap, but also because, I wanted some semblance of community. I mean, there were strippers who stayed there for the same reason. You know, they came to town and they just didn't want to be isolated, you know. And there was a big group room where we all had, we ate together and, had some camaraderie and stuff. So I met someone there and I thought, well, I'll train her to do some team play. So we went to, taught her basic strategy, showed her the basics of the team play, and then we went to the Monte Carlo to play. And mind you, I'd been playing for maybe a month in Vegas at that time, and at the stakes I was playing at that time, I eventually moved up to much higher stakes, but at that time I was spreading between $25 to like $150 in double-deck games, single and double-deck games. So we got dressed up, went to the Monte Carlo, sat down, and I forgot to mention the bid that for all the time I was playing, I didn't get offered any comps. You know, I never got offered squat. I didn't ask for them, but I might have got some if I asked, but no one was ever offering anything to me. So we sat down, we start playing, and then within minutes, the pit crew and like somebody else, I mean, they're like, there are three people all around her, like, excited, bouncing up and down, trying to give her like, comp her a buffet and a room, asking where she's staying and everything. And I hadn't prepared her for this because it never happened to me. And I didn't, so she didn't know what to say. They're saying, "Where are you staying?" And, she knows she can't say she's staying at the hostel, because, she's not dressed like she is. But the other thing is I was kind of miffed, I've been playing for a month, putting a lot of money on the tables, and I hadn't got offered squat. She plays for 5 minutes, and they're offering her the moon.
Let me guess. She was hot?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. That's a superpower.
Yeah,
I mean,
it is. Yeah.
Sexism is alive and well in Las Vegas.
I love the idea, though, of card counters staying in youth hostels. I mean, I did have friends when I was young, that went to Europe and would do this, traveling around with tens of thousands of dollars in their pockets, staying in pensions or, hostels.
Yeah,
it's hilarious.
That was
me.
An issue because I was sharing a room with five other guys, and I had thousands of dollars in cash and chips on me at any one point. And the other thing is this hostel is downtown. It was on Fremont Street, and this is maybe almost 15 years ago, when it was even more dangerous back then. And I almost got mugged one night, in fact. But so I would ride my bicycle back down to the hostel on Fremont Street, and I would hug the exact middle of the road when I'd go down, because I figured that I was equidistant from each sidewalk. So, you know, I was the maximum distance possible from both sidewalks if someone was going to try to come out and jump me, you know.
So you were less afraid. Was the Fremont Street experience open then, or were there cars going by?
The experience was open. There were not cars, but I'm going down, you know, the other way down Fremont. I mean, I'm going towards the El Cortez, and then you continue down the hill.
So and east of Las Vegas Boulevard.
Yes, east. Yeah, east. Well east. That's the Fremont
area.
That's the Fremont area. I'm talking about. And especially the Fremont area, that Fremont area 13 years ago was even, I don't know what it is, you know, now. I actually haven't been down there in a while, but,
yeah, it's still not great.
Yeah, but 13 years or so ago, it was pretty bad.
But you were more worried about the people on the sidewalk than cars coming in both directions.
There was very little. I mean, I'd come home at, you know, 1 a.m. There's very little traffic. You know, if there was a car, I'd move over. But, you know, and I going downhill, I could go just as fast as the cars behind me if there were any. And, you know, in the other direction, I would move over if I needed to.
All right.
You know, I don't want to toot my own horn, but I guess that's exactly what I'm doing. But I am an internationally published author on the subject of bicycle safety. I've had cover stories in Australian Cyclist, Car Busters, Minnesota Cyclist, and some others. And one of my most popular sites is bicyclesafe.com. So I think I know how to, you know, I'm not a daredevil when I ride. I'm not going to do anything crazy or unsafe.
All right. So in these magazines you publish that you go down the middle of Fremont Street with thousands of dollars in your pocket at 3 a.m.
That's essentially correct, yeah.
All right, good. So in that same area is the Western Hotel.
Yeah.
Now, the Western is notorious for breaking dealers. Mm-hmm. And so you have a couple of Western stories of now I'm a country Western dancer. Maybe that's not the same thing.
Oh, so to start the stories. Yes. Well, then, a few. I love the Western just because it was so incredibly seedy in a way that I just can't describe. You walk in, it wouldn't seem like a casino as much as maybe like a cafeteria with the old fluorescent lightings that are buzzing and they're all yellow and everything is unclean. The smoke is so thick you can cut it with a knife, and everything was in disrepair. You know, it wasn't nice in any sense of the word. And I mean, if anyone's who doesn't live here, their conception of a casino, we couldn't imagine this thing could possibly be a casino. So I love to take, you know, guests and visitors to that place just to show them. You know, first they would see, you know, the Wynn or, you know, the Mirage or something. And then you take them to the Western, and you know, it's culture shock. You know, it's like going from Japan to India. So I love the place, and so I never wanted to risk actually ever getting barred from there because I wanted the ability to go back and you know, bring my friends there. Also, because the other thing is, I think the maximum bet there was maybe $25.
Yeah,
so you know, you could spread one to 25, but you're still going to make $3 an hour. So you know, it wasn't really plausible that you could make money from counting there.
The last time I was in the Western, they would crank the roulette wheel. The dealer would spin the roulette wheel as hard as she could possibly spin it, the rotor. And then she would spin the ball. And by the time the ball landed, the rotor had come to a stop. It was in such bad shape. You know? It looked like somebody had a brake on it, you know.
Wow.
Yeah, I love the Western.
Yeah, yeah.
That sounds beatable.
It does. I was thinking the same thing.
But so. Another reason I have a soft spot in my heart for the Western is before it was called the Western, it was called the Orbit Inn. And one of my very first blackjack teams, I was going to be tested, right? And we would take somebody out to the casino, and one of the team members would watch them play and make sure they were betting the right amount at the right count or whatever. So I went out to the Golden Gate, and I bought in, and the guy who was going to, you know, test me came to the table with 3 crumpled up dollar bills, and the pit boss came running down the pit, pointed at him and his $3 and said, he gets no action, right? So he had some heat, obviously. So we decided that the only place maybe that we could play with unmolested was the Orbit Inn. And we just changed my unit size to $5 units so that I would spread from like 1 to 25. And so we went down there, and he basically was drinking and having a good time during my checkout. And that was my checkout for this team. And that teammate, his name was Bill Benter, who ended up going on to do pretty well in gambling after that.
As in billionaire.
Yeah.
Bill's a good guy.
Yeah.
Well, so let me tell you what I did at the Western.
All right.
Besides staying there once for $16 a night. $16 a night even on the weekend.
And
this
was great.
This is maybe 2002, 2003, they still had rooms for 16 a night.
It's still even expensive on the grade from the hostel.
Oh, yeah, it's $5 more than the hostel, but you got your own room. I mean, that was kind of a deal. Although at the hostel, you got breakfast and community. But anyway, okay, so.
And strippers.
So, knowing I couldn't count there, you know, $25, and you get a checks play for $25, you know. I didn't want to risk it, but I found there was an exploitable way. The dealers were so new and so bad, not just at dealing, but at math, I could play them for errors. I'd flat bet $25, they'd make about one error per hour. That's $25 an hour, which was my goal at that time when I was, you know, starting out at low level. Incidentally, you mentioned that I was a low-level blackjack player. Initially, I was. I don't know what, you know, at what point you get to the mid-level, but, you know, by the time I stopped, I'd have as much as $1,200 on the table at a time. So I don't know if that's still low-level or not.
But. I would not call $1,200 a time the low-level players.
Okay. I mean, that's not my unit, but, I mean, I would go up to that much.
Yeah, before you know, when you came on, it was your goal in Las Vegas seemed to be to live as inexpensively as possible, and you'd talk about saving $3 here and $4 there and $6 there.
Well, that's what the Wizard was asking me about, because that's what, you know, I mean, when he and I came to Vegas around the same time, around, you know, just like right after 2000, and, you know, that's what he knew me for back then, you know, so
often
I guess
those
that's
stories
what he
are funnier,
about.
Too.
They are funnier. They're a lot funnier. I mean, it's not, you know, it's less interesting if I stay in a nicer place and, you know. I don't chase the. I mean, you know, everyone wants to save some money, but I don't chase the deals like I used to. I do try to find them to publish on the website. So anyway,
so how
at
would
the Western.
You, how would you induce these heirs for $25 an hour?
Well, that's an excellent question, Bob Dancer.
Oh, well, good.
So I would kind of help the dealers add up their hands. You know, they'd be counting so slowly, they'd turn over the cards, and, you know, their mouths are moving as they're adding, and I would say with them, like, you know, like 15, 18, 22, you know, and it'd really be 21, but, you know, I'd go, woohoo, 22, you know, and a lot of, sometimes they'd go, sometimes it would work. The same for my hand, you know, sometimes I would, you know, I'd bust with a 22, but I would tuck my cards anyway, like I didn't bust, you know, and then they'd turn them over, and I'd go, woohoo, and, you know, I'd get paid. Sometimes I got paid for things, even when I wasn't helping them add up their hands, I would still get paid anyway. One of my favorite tricks was if there were a lot of small cards left and I wanted to eat the small cards, I would just keep hitting. I mean, I'd have 25 showing on the table, and I would keep scratching the two cards I had in my hand, you know, and it would take them a while to figure it out.
Surprised you didn't get thrown out.
But, you know, what really amazed me is they were all from different countries, you know, every different foreign country you could think of. They didn't speak any English. I have no idea how it was able to possibly train them, because they couldn't understand my basic questions. Well, and once I had a dealer, I was grumbling about my hand. You know, I had a 16, she had a 10, and I was just grumbling about it. Of course I was going to hit, you know. And then, you know, I was just – but before I actually scratched my cards, she put a card down on the table as though maybe she couldn't understand what I was saying and thought I was audibly asking for the hit, which wouldn't have mattered anyway because you have to scratch, right? So she put the card down. It was an ace. And I told her, I said, you know, I didn't actually ask for that. She picked the ace back up and put it back on top of the deck.
Wow.
And so then the pit boss starts running over to scold her, and so I quickly scratched to make sure I would get it back, because I didn't want to get, I mean, otherwise, you know, I'd want to keep it on top. I mean, you know, you have an ace coming in the next hand, it's a big advantage. But you know, I didn't want to get her in trouble.
$25 is not such a big advantage.
Well, still, I didn't know. I mean, that's all I was playing for at that time. But I didn't I didn't want to get her in trouble, because they were mean to the staff, and I was sorry to see that, so I didn't want to get her in trouble, so I just scratched to make sure she could get it. I tipped there. I was the only one who ever tipped. I didn't tip much, but, you know.
The helping the dealers add, I had a friend who liked to play roulette, and he would go to Slots of Fun or Silver City and get the break-in roulette dealers, and he was a roulette dealer himself at Bally's, and you know, he would bet chips all over the layout. And then when the number hit, you know, he'd been dealing roulette for years, and he would say, oh, that's, you know, 329 or whatever. And the dealer would stop and add it up. And after about three times, when he had given him the right total,
yeah,
then they started just trusting him.
Yeah.
And then he just raped them.
That sounds like a good
There's
deal.
An indie movie called St. John of Las Vegas, which has a similar ploy.
Really?
Yeah. Now, with it's an insurance scam. I mean, this insurance adjuster, he's got 15 out of 15 denials, so he sets himself up so that when he makes a – he's a crooked insurance adjuster, you know, when he makes the claim that he's going to get in on, you know, they believe him just because 15 times he's
– I know, see.
He's been right.
Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah.
All right.
Steve Buscemi, by the way, isn't that?
Steve Buscemi. All Steve, right.
Shout
now,
out to him because, you know, he's everyone's favorite actor.
There's a story once about Michael Shackelford resisting getting caller ID on his telephone, and you found that.
I find the wizard amusing. I hope he finds me amusing, and I hope he doesn't mind that I rag on him so much. But, I mean, some of the stories, you know, you just can't make up, you know. I mean, just for years, you know, he would never get caller ID, and he could afford it. I mean, I was working for him selling his ad space.
How much does caller ID cost?
Yeah, I know. Right? I was making him, you know, I don't want to spit out any numbers, but a huge amount of money, right? He could clearly afford the caller ID. In fact, I had a friend at the time I told that, you know, he was resisting the caller ID, and she knew, and we, all the three of us, we went to Niagara Falls together once. But she was saying, oh, my God, if I were homeless living in a box on the street, one thing I would still have would be my caller ID. So, you know, I was calling him on my mobile with the speaker on from the suite at the Stratosphere, and a friend was with me. She was lying on the couch that he had there. And I called him, and, you know, he answers the phone. This is Mike. And I said, hey, Wizard, it's Blue Jay. I said, by the way, why don't you get caller ID so you, like, you know, it isn't about time? He said, but I can just ask who's calling. And, like, my friend literally fell off the couch when she heard that, you know, and...
didn't understand that sometimes it's nice to know before you.
That's the whole point. I mean, he didn't see it, you know, but I can just ask you, so it's okay, never mind. But
you
anyway,
know,
I can tell you that.
Young people listening to this show are all scratching their heads going, there was a time when you didn't know who was calling?
Yeah, I mean, exactly. Well, and by the way, he has it now, so... I don't know if it was a result of my prodding.
You mean he still
or not.
Has a landline, is what you're saying?
Yes, he still has. Well, yeah, I have a landline too. I mean, you get better quality, you know.
Not at my house.
Okay, fair enough.
My wife hasn't really figured out telephone ID. When she leaves me a message on my cell phone, which it lists her name, Bonnie, she always starts her conversation with, "Hello, darling, this is Bonnie." Now... as though I couldn't figure out who was saying hello, darling, to me. Trust me, that's a very small set of people.
My daughter does the same thing. She'll text me. She'll sign it, your daughter, and in parentheses, by the way, that's Connell. And he's like, well, I've got one daughter, you know. That's the dead giveaway, you know.
How old is Connell?
She's 16.
Oh,
wow.
Well,
that's...
she should know better by now.
She did the Stratosphere thing yesterday, the sky jump.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So she's still alive?
Yes, I checked. There were no fatalities before she died. I mean, I checked that up because, you know, there was that shooting range in Las Vegas where, you know, you see the billboard, shoot a live machine gun. And I don't know if you heard the news, but, like, this 8-year-old girl killed her instructor there with a machine gun. And six months to a year ago. And you go online and you look at their, you know, like their Yelp reviews and all the other reviews. They've got all like 4.5, 5 stars for all these places. And, like, no one, they're still open and no one knows that happened.
Wow.
Scary stuff. There's a video on YouTube. They cut it off right before the fatal shot, but because the parents were taking a video.
Yep. I guess. All right. Now.
Next topic.
Low roller plays Las Vegas buses. What would you do?
I don't think you can do this anymore. And I honestly wouldn't waste my time trying now. But okay, so back in the day, the strip bus was like $5 for a 24-hour pass. But the local buses were $2 for a 24-hour pass. And now if you got your 24-hour pass on the local bus, you could then ride the strip bus for like 25 cents or 50 cents a ride. So unless you're going to be riding the bus, you know, multiple times a day, you know, it's a much better deal to get that local pass. So that was my little play.
Oh, see, and here once, I thought you were going to be finding coupon books in the bus or something.
No. I did like going onto the bus and putting my coins in and saying, did I win? You know, they just groaned. But anyway, I liked, you know, I'm theatrical, as you can see. So my friend was watching. It was the same friend who fell off the couch at the Stratosphere. This is probably minutes after that. I got on the bus. So what I would do, I wanted that local pass. So I would get on the bus, put my $2 in, get the pass, and then walk right off the bus without riding it just so I could have that local day pass so that I could then use on the strip bus.
Would Did you wait a half hour to get this passed so you could save 50 cents?
It wasn't a half hour. I mean, you just, you know, the bus comes, you walk on the bus, and you put your $2 in and walk right off. But that, I did that. So I once, you know, for theatrics, I put my $2 in, the pass came out, I grabbed it, and I just screamed, "So long, suckers!" And I ran off the bus and and just ran away. And my friend watched to see what the reaction would be. And she said the bus driver just stared out the door for a few seconds and finally said, "Alrighty then." Yeah.
Welcome to Vegas.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Welcome to Vegas.
See, yeah.
All right. Vegas Click. VegasClick.com is one of your websites. If you want to see what Michael Blue Jay looks like, you can go to VegasClick.com.
I don't know what I looked like 10 years ago, but yeah.
Yes.
I need to take a new picture.
All right. Yeah. Oh, what is that website? Is it something you want to talk about? You're here
Sure. I started the website as a hobby. Around 2000. I'll actually tell you it was before I ever came to Vegas. You know, I was researching it all on the internet, and all the websites were pretty crappy, and so I thought I can make a better website about Vegas with just what I've learned from these various, you know, sites and from books and stuff. So I started putting a site together, and honestly, my idea was I would have business cards printed up, and that I would kind of, you know, liberally, you know, give them out when I went to casinos, and maybe I would get, you know, comps or free dinners or stuff like that for people who wanted good reviews. And, you know, I never had the opportunity to do that. So that never paid off. But then ironically, a few years later, when I started, when the site got more popular and I started getting advertising, that's kind of how I made a lot of my fortune, is, you know, from that site that I kind of started half as a hobby and half to just hopefully get, you know, a couple of free meals out of.
Wow.
So I cover, you know, stuff about Vegas. It's geared a lot towards, you know, saving money, you know, where the cheap stuff is. You know, I have information about gambling and the hotels, and I'm going to hopefully add some information about shows. It's one thing I don't have. But all kinds of stuff.
Stuff visitors will want to know. Free shows that way, right?
Stuff visitors will want to know. Well, you know, I have the tips for the shows. Like, I mean, a lot of people don't know about the half-price ticket outlets. You know, I mean, that's gold. You know, if you're going to see some shows, you can score 50% off right there.
But usually they don't have Cirque du Soleil tickets, right?
They do have them, but they don't have them for 50% off. You can get maybe 20% off, 20 or 30. And another tip, though, is like, and if you're going to, a lot of times the hotel you're staying at will give you a discount on their show. So if you're not partial to where you're staying, stay at the hotel that has the show that you want to see.
Very good.
Actually, the one place to generate some Cirque tickets is My Vegas.
That one's pretty good.
So.
And, you know, the way to get free tickets, and I've done this a few times, and I'm about to do it tomorrow, is you sit through a 90-minute timeshare presentation, and they'll give you a whole bunch of stuff.
Yes.
I don't know. What is your time worth?
That's fun. They promised us 4 show tickets and 4 buffets, so that's worth 90 minutes to me.
4 show tickets to a Cirque show.
Well, we're not going to get Cirque. They didn't say 4 show tickets to a Cirque show.
Yeah, they did not.
These are the $9.95 afternoon shows or something that you're going to go see.
I don't remember. One of them was the Beatles show.
That's a
Cirque
show.
That's a Cirque
show. No, not that Beatles show. The Beatles tribute show.
Oh, okay.
And then there's the Evil Dead horror musical.
Musical? Burlesque?
Yeah, I don't think it was a zombie burlesque. It's a different one. Evil Dead is not exactly zombies. It's horror, but it was pretty – I saw the pictures. It was pretty bloody. Probably the bloodiest musical ever. That's probably their tagline. The bloodiest musical ever. But
I don't know. I saw Reanimator, which the musical, which was taken from the movie. That was pretty bloody.
Speaking of shows.
Yes.
You found a advantage play of watching a girly show called Crazy Girls. Crazy Girls was a long-running show.
Yeah, it still is.
Still
actually.
Running, yeah.
They moved it to Planet Hollywood, though, from Flamingo.
And for years, it was at the Riviera. And so anyway, so what was your advantage play
It's theoretical. I didn't have an actual advantage play. It's just something that went through my mind. But I was sitting, you know, I hadn't seen any of the naughty shows before. I didn't know what to expect. I'm not the kind of person who goes to strip clubs. So I think the wizard was comped, and he takes me to a lot of comp stuff. He's offered me a comp lunch at the Tropicana later. So I have to just shout out to him because he has bestowed lots of stuff on me. And my favorite being when we saw Van Halen at Mandalay Bay a few years ago. So anyway, he had tickets to Crazy Girls and invited me. And we went and I'm sitting there just, I don't know what to expect. So I'm asking him, like, what is this like? He said, well, it's like a topless show. I said, well, what do they do? I mean, like, just stand there topless? He said, no, they're going to like, they're going to, you know, dance a little, they're going to sing. I said, well, what are they going to sing? He said, well, it's not like it's going to be Simon and Garfunkel, you know? And I was like, well, why not, you know? So he said, well, it's going to be kind of more like, you know, naughty or erotic songs or something like that. So I'm trying to picture this, but I'm thinking Simon and Garfunkel. He insists there's not going to be any Simon and Garfunkel. So I figured the advantage play there, I would bet him like $5,000 that they will not sing Simon and Garfunkel. And then I go backstage and offer one of the performers. I would offer, yeah, I expect, okay, well, yes. Whatever it was you said. Okay, so I think they're gonna sing it. So I'm gonna bet him $5,000 they're gonna sing it, and then I go backstage and I bribe one of the performers, you know, $1,000. You know,
yeah, unfortunately, they lip sync and the show is all sort of set. It's
not like the
performers have their individual.
So I actually would have lost $5,000 on that. It wouldn't have been a true advantage play. I didn't know that. That's what. Yeah, you're right. When they came out, it was all lip sync. I said, like, this is bad. And I actually left. I was thinking that's kind of rude because he asked me there, but I was really just really not enjoying it. And he said he didn't mind if I did, and he gave it a bad review too. So.
Yeah, when the show first came out, it was actually really good. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was like 30 years ago. I mean, and much different than it is today. And I just saw it recently because they give tickets away like water to that show.
Yeah.
Maybe you'll get the timeshare presentation.
Well, I can't take the kids to that one, so that one's going to be...
There's a website called something like Free Tickets for Locals or something like that.
And they send you lots of emails.
Yeah, and they're constantly giving away tickets to that show.
I should put that as a item on my website to just come here and get a local ID so you can get all the local discounts.
Well, you don't need a local ID. You can just use your passport and tell them you have a local address. Just make up an address that's local and show the passport because your passport doesn't have your address.
Yeah, it's all internet, so you have to have a email address, and they will say, today we have tickets to this show, and you call in or send an email, go, yeah, get on the list, and they'll go in and you pick them up.
Yeah.
And what is this?
I think it's called Discount Tickets for Locals, maybe.
Yeah, and I think it's the number 4.
It's the number 4, so if you... If you Google Discount Tickets for Locals, you'll find it.
Wow.
Now,
thanks for the tip.
Yeah.
How did I not know about that?
I don't know. Is it soon going to be on VegasClick.com?
I hope so.
All right.
Once I update it, it's long in the tooth, and I'm kind of embarrassed anyone listening is going to go there and say, you haven't updated this in 2 years. I said, yeah, I suck, you know.
Did you ever go to Macau with the Wizard?
Did I ever go to Macau with the Wizard? Let's see. Did I? Oh, yes. I recall in 2007 I went to Macau with the Wizard. I don't have any stories there except being propositioned on the street, which, it's not very – oh, no, I do. There is one story. Now that you mentioned it, I was wondering how – okay. I see why you brought this up now. I hope this is funny enough story, but the dealers there, they're Chinese because it's in China, you know. They know maybe 10 words of English, and the Wizard is there because he's researching. He wants to know the rules, and he wanted to know some rule. He probably wanted to know if you could double down after a split, right? And so he's trying to ask the dealer this question, you know, after we've been playing a while. So he starts this question saying, now, hypothetically, and I'm like, you know, I said, Wizard, if you know 10 words in Chinese, is one of them going to be hypothetically, you know? So I just drew on the table. I said, like, you know, 6-6 split, you know, like 5 double, okay, you know, and he understood, you know. I'm just amazed that people can't lower their language level to the listener. And it's not just Americans that do it to foreigners. When I was in Japanese, the Japanese did the same thing to me. You know, I'd tell them, look, you know, I know maybe 1,000 words. And then, you know, they'd say something. I'd look it up in my dictionary, and it was like, you know, the fifth synonym for something. I was like, how am I going to know that, you know?
Yeah.
Hypothetically, that sounds like a good story.
Yeah.
All right. Reno. You lived in Reno or went to Reno a lot in the past. One of the things you talked about, it was in the Reno section, I don't know if it was in Reno, was an advantage play for Flip It.
Flip It I did here, but Flip It is the game that you put quarters or dollars in, and they flip up onto these trays, and they're pusher arms. I don't know why I'm gesturing with my hands, because on the radio no one can see it, right? But I'm going to do it anyway because it just feels natural. But the pusher arms push the coins back to you, and any that spill over that you get. By the way, if you don't know where the advantage is on that, because it seems like it's an even some game, if you peer over and you look into it, not all the coins that spill over will be returned to you. On the extreme edges, there's like, you know, 5% on each side, 10% total of the entire area that go back into the machine, and you don't get those. So that's where the edge is, and that's why I think Stanford Wong had, when I mentioned that to the wizard, he told me that Stanford Wong had calculated the house edge on that machine by measuring, you know, what percentage of the total tray area the side trays where the coins are that you don't get back. But I found that every different flip-it machine would tend to seek its own level. Sometimes you see some that are like three layers of coins deep, and sometimes they're six or seven. Every machine is its own personality. I mean, one might be primed at only three levels deep, and one might need seven to get primed. So by watching how it's played, I could kind of tell when a machine was in the positive territory. And I couldn't win very much, but I did prove to the wizard that I could play it consistently at an advantage. It was the one at the four queens, and I played it for like a month, and I did kind of well
but,
on it.
Isn't it the kind of thing where you might have to wait, you know, days for it to get primed?
Well, and I'm playing downtown anyway, so that's when I was playing single deck trying to make my living counting cards. So it was the four queens. I would walk in. You know, I could go there a few times a day without spending really much extra time. At the same time, I was also looking for primed piggy bank and slots, which I never found. So,
Easy to find. No, those weren't hard.
Well, maybe downtown, with all the fleas downtown.
I don't know, man. It was the same casino where I spent more time looking for a positive piggy bank, in which I never found, in going into the four queens, two or three times a day. But I often found that flip it was ready to go. And it was funny because I played it once, I got a big return out of it, and the machine was negative at that point. And this woman had been watching me play, and she's like, "Can I play now?" I said, "Yeah, be my guest. Fill it back up for me." Flip it was good. Other stories about Reno, though.
Okay, good. Give us a 6-minute story about Reno.
What's the best? Which one do you want to hear? Which is the best one?
The 6-minute one.
Cash Castle. I really like I liked Fitzgerald's.
Me too.
I liked, and I was sad when this one became the D, which my son thinks is amusing just because he's juvenile. But anyway, the Fitzgerald in Reno, I really like the leprechaun that's out there, just always talking to you in Irish, to come in and experience everything. And for some reason, I don't know why, I just always imagined him trying to impersonate Michael Jackson. Like, "Do you want to be starting something? Do you want to be starting something? Do you want to be starting something?" So, I don't know, just that image of that leprechaun doing Michael Jackson somehow beckoned me to that place. It was the first place I ever got barred at, but I still love it. And actually, I think I enjoyed getting barred there because the first time you get barred, I felt cool. Like, wow, I'm too good. It's a James Bond kind of thing. The second time, when it came pretty quick after the first time, I was thinking like, okay, this is not fun anymore. Like, if this keeps happening at this rate, I'm not going to be able to stay in this business very long. But the first time was kind of cool. Anyway, being in Fitzgerald and playing, I noticed they had this game called promotion called Cash Castle, where he had this huge bank of slot machines, and they had three different marquees with three different jackpots that would tick higher and higher. And the gimmick was that not only could any machine win that jackpot on any play, regardless of whether you hit anything or not, but also when it got to a certain level, it was guaranteed to hit. I mean, the small jackpot was 100. Must hit machine. Small one was $100, the medium one was like 500, I think, and the big one was 1,000. And I hit that a lot. I made more money from that thing than I did counting cards there. I got it pretty consistently. I mean, I had to watch it for a while to figure out when the optimum time to play was. I mean, you don't want to play it too early. You want to play it, later when you're not going to have to put much money in. But you don't want to wait too long because then someone else has won the jackpot. I don't remember what it was, but I kind of figured out where the optimum points were. And so I'm playing a machine. I'm realizing, I got to wait for the reels to spin and stop and, tally up my win, and someone else could be winning in the meantime. So I start playing a second machine, and then I start playing a third machine, one on each side of me. And I thought, that's not enough. So there's this whole bank. So I put money in all of them, and I'm running around in a circle just hitting the spin button on every one. But, I could just about time it to get it perfectly. So I had, 10 machines in motion constantly. Actually, it's probably more than that, 10 or 15. And, I did well with that one. I remember calling the wizard, telling him about it. He was delighted, yeah. I guess is the word I would use.
Very good.
I liked Fitzgerald's because they had they had single deck with $1,000 max, and they didn't strip the cards. So it was the only place where I was able, where I've been able to play single deck and sequence the game.
Wow.
And they, the thing that was great about them was you could spread from 100 to 3 hands of 1,000. And as soon as they realized that you were not counting cards, they were fine with it. So, you know, they would count you down, you know, realize, oh, he's betting into a big negative, and then they were fine with it. And
yeah.
So, yeah, it was really good. They would let you win between 50 and 100,000 before they would bar you. So
wow.
Yeah, it was a good place.
You know, one thing I also liked about them is that they were so polite when they barred me. They came up behind me and said, excuse me, sir, you're too good for us. You know, we're going to have to ask you not to play blackjack anymore. You're welcome to play any of our other games.
Yep,
you know,
same
and
thing.
And I thought it would always be like that. But then when I got to Vegas, I found, like, they send an armed contingent of security guards to your table to escort you to the door and read you the trespass act that said if you ever set foot in the casino again, you'll be arrested, you know. So I thought, that's different, you know.
Yep.
So.
Yeah.
So I tell people, yeah, there are, you know, 6 casinos in Nevada that I'm not able to play blackjack in, and 2 that I'm not able to set foot in, and those 2 are in Las Vegas, which both went out of business, so that was my revenge on them.
So then, good. Well, and the ones that who are still in business, if it was a while ago, it probably changed hands by now, so you probably can go back in.
Yeah, maybe.
All right. We have a couple more questions for Michael Blue Jay. And before we do that, we're going to talk about our sponsors. South Point has more than 10,000 games, returning more than 99%. That's more than anyone else has. For the rest of July, which is 3.5 more days as we're talking, 24/7 July Money Madness promotion. They have 2 progressives. First one begins at 10,000 and must be hit before 25,000. The winner gets the big prize. Everybody else who's playing gets $25 in free play. Immediately thereafter, it resets to a 10,000 and starts to climb again. Simultaneously with this is another progressive beginning at 1,000, which must be hit by 2,500. This too will start again immediately when it hits and is predicted to be hit 3 times a day all month long. At the Palms, they have weekly drawings at 7 p.m. on Fridays. Winners share $10,000. You don't need to be there to win, but if you don't claim your prize by midnight, it evaporates. There are multiple entry tickets Friday afternoon and evening. Last drawing for will be this Friday, and then there will likely be another one starting again in August. PFP, play for prizes. Ending this Friday is up to $190 a day in Albertsons gift cards. Albertsons is a supermarket chain. Gift cards may be earned and redeemed Monday through Friday at a rate of 0.2%. You keep your points. VideoPoker.com is the best place to practice lots of games. If you sign up for the Gold membership, $8.95 a month, $79.95 a year, this allows you to get corrections on mini games. They also have daily, weekly, and monthly contests. The weekly contest this week is Super Triple Play. This is a 6 coins per line game where you get a bump up in the pay schedule on 4 of a kinds and straight flush. So in double-double bonus, for example, the payoff for straight flush goes from 250 to 750. Excuse me, 250 to 700, and the payoff for each of the 4 of a kind categories is doubled. The net effect is that these pay schedules returns about an extra 0.2% over the base game with a whole bunch of variants. If you're not hitting 4 of a kinds today, you're not going to like this game. The game does require you to learn a new strategy. For example, on the double-double bonus, Super Triple Play, 3-card Royal King Queen Jack is preferable to 2-pair. So preferable to 2 kings and 2 queens. And this almost never is the case in video poker, but because of the extra payout on the straight flush and your round numbers 1,000 to 1 to get it, it makes it sufficient difference to play. All right. We're talking to Michael Blue Jay.
I think South Point also has the $5 matinee movies every day, if I'm not mistaken. I think it's that one. So that's another plug for South Point.
South Point has a lot of good things to it. So it has the bowling alleys and the movies and the probably the best base place to bet horses. So there's a various bunches of things.
Why do you say that? Best place to? I mean, I know their tournaments are good, but
I spoke quickly. I've heard some things, and I can't back that up. But some people who I respect said that they have very good tournaments.
I heard the tournaments are good, but yeah.
All right. Did you ever try hole carding at three-card poker?
I did, just briefly. You know, I'd read about it, and you know, wanted to give it a shot. And you know, I really you got to get your head down far enough to see
not if you're doing it right.
You know, well, I don't know. It's like if you know, it's just physics. I mean, or not physics. I mean, it's if you know, if you can't see the card, you know, then you've got to get lower. So I was at Golden Nugget downtown, and again, I'm demonstrating for the benefit of the hosts, even though the viewers can't see and or the listeners can't see. And you know, I just basically had to pretend I'm drunk, because how else can my head get that far down? So I'm resting it in my hand, you know, just kind of pretending I'm drunk and just getting my head almost on the bar on the table. And for a fact, I just kind of actually, quote, fell asleep once where they had to wake me up, you know. But I could pretty much see the card, although it wasn't very comfortable. And in playing drunk, you know, supposedly drunk, I couldn't play very fast. But I told a friend of mine, I said, you know, what I need is a wheelchair, you know. And he said, oh, well, I have one. You know, there was one in the house, in the garage when I bought my house. So he loaned it to me, and I took it out, and it was, you know, used it once.
So
it did help.
For our
I felt a little guilty about that, because I'm, you know, not actually handicapped, even though I can't run anymore. Because, you know, I did the Las Vegas Marathon with the Wizard, but now my knee is busted, and I'm never going to run again.
For our listeners, if you think you have to put your head on the table, you're doing it wrong, and you should go to a different dealer. You know, doing that kind of thing is what wises the casino up to what's going on, and, you know, we'll just burn the game very quickly.
Yeah. So what you're saying is wait for a really bad dealer.
Find a better dealer, yeah.
I'm just going to show you guys, but I was telling the dealer, I found one dealer, it was so flashy, it was kind of like this, and she jumped like this, and then the last one, she go, you know, put her own down. It was almost like that. Sorry,
the
listeners can't see it.
You don't need to, yeah.
I know we're running short on time, so before I forget, I just want to give a shout out to my family, my wife, and my beautiful children, and, you know.
They're not going to listen anyway, so.
Yeah, they're probably not listening, but I love them very much, and they mean the world to me.
Yeah.
Well, good. It's always guests. It's always good when we have guests on the air who love their wife and children.
Did I do a better job this time? Are you happier with this interview versus the last time? Because I wanted to redeem myself, like a coupon, you know?
Have you ever tried to cash coupons for the wrong casino?
Match play chips? Yeah, I did.
Can you do this in 1 minute?
Yeah, I think so. I had like four to six Imperial Palace chips that were match play chips, and I told the Wizard I was going to try to pass them, you know, for real chips at other casinos, and he bet me that I couldn't do it, of course, so the bet was on. So I passed, to make it a challenge, I passed each one at a different casino, each using a different method, and I was able to pass all four. Not on the first try every time, but I was able to do it.
So give us two of the methods.
Okay, one of them, I put one down, and I said, after I bought in for, you know, a couple hundred, I put the one chip down, and I asked her, I said, can I get change for this? I just want silver. You know, and knowing she was about to get, you know, I was going to use it for tipping, you know, she wasn't going to scrutinize it that closely, so she just called over quickly, like, $5 Imperial Palace, okay? You know, and the pit boss just waved it on, and so I got that one, so that one was pretty good. And another one, I asked, do you take chips from other casinos? He said, yes. Oh, well, I got these, and I put down, like, 20 or 30 chips, so I just thought, you know, they're not going to see it among the one bad one among all the good ones, and that was exactly what happened.
Good. All right. Well, we welcome people's questions. You can send them to gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com or tweet them at me at RWM21. You can get the show delivered automatically every week at iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, or my site, richardmunchkin.com. You can see all the old shows or hear all the old shows at bobdancer.com, and that's it.
All right. So we thank Michael Blue Jay, and thank you, Richard. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good day.
You've been listening. listening to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Subscribe to the show in iTunes, and episodes will be delivered to you automatically every week. Archived versions of past shows may be found at bobdancer.com and richardmunchkin.com. We welcome emails at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin are both available on Facebook and welcome your questions. The sponsors for the show are the South Point Hotel, Casino, and Spa, the M Resort, the Palms Casino Resort, and the website videopoker.com. Join us again next week for another Gambling with an Edge.